101, The Hits.
Hey.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Alice Bryant and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, a man who made millions from selling fake wine bottles to collectors was expelled from the United States last week. U.S. Customs and Immigration officials said the man, Rudy Kurniawan, was sent back to his home country of Indonesia. Between 2004 and 2012, he made millions of dollars by putting low-cost wines from Napa Valley into fake bottles of expensive wines. The 44-year-old Indonesian did it all from his home outside of Los Angeles, California. Kurniawan came to the U.S. on a student visa in the 1990s. He unsuccessfully applied for asylum protection and was ordered to leave the country in 2003. But he stayed illegally. Kurniawan's family gained their wealth operating a beer supply business in Indonesia. He claimed to be a buyer and seller of rare wines and made millions of dollars at auctions. Some collectors called him Dr. Conti for his love of a French Burgundy wine, Domaine de la Romanée Conti. In one auction in 2006, Kurniawan sold a record $24.7 million of wine. His plans started to fall apart when some of his wines were found to be fakes. Christie's is a company that auctions rare and expensive items. In 2007, Christie's withdrew a bottle that Kurniawan said was a 1982 Chateau Lepin. The company said it was a fake. In 2008, his $600,000 collection of Domaine Ponceau wine was also pulled from an auction. Kurniawan claimed that one bottle was made in 1929. But the winemaker did not begin selling that kind of wine until 1934. When the FBI searched his home in 2012, law enforcement officials found hundreds of bottles, corks, and labels. At Kurniawan's trial, a wine expert testified that he collected 19,000 fake wine labels from 27 of the world's best wines. And billionaire William Koch, a wine collector, said he paid Kurniawan $2.1 million for 219 fake bottles of wine. Government lawyers said he might have sold as many as 12,000 fake bottles of wine. Many are still in people's collections. With money from the fraud, Kurniawan bought expensive cars, including a Lamborghini, and paid for clothes and other living expenses. The government took $20 million worth of his property. And the court also ordered Kurniawan to return $28.4 million to seven victims. He was found guilty of fraud in 2013 and spent 7 years in prison. Last week, U.S. immigration officials said Kurniawan is a public safety threat and sent him back to Indonesia.
Dr. Flavio Falconi could not get homeless drug addicts to talk to him on the streets while wearing his white medical coat. But with face paint and a big red ball for a nose, the mental health doctor has become a hero in Cracolandia, or Crackland, a poor area of São Paulo, Brazil, that is home to many homeless people and drug abusers. Falconi's patients know him as the clown, not the doctor. He treats a growing number of Brazilians living on the street because of COVID-19. The pandemic has badly hurt Brazil's economy, and the government continues to reduce its assistance programs for the poor. Falconi, as clown, wears gold jewelry, black and red clothes, and a baseball cap, a kind of hat. Falconi is not alone in his street work. Actor Andrea Massira joins him in the outreach effort. She also wears clown clothing. The two use humor and music to help put people at ease. It is a first step in providing mental health and drug abuse treatment to the people of Cracolandia. What makes you laugh is the clown that trips, not the clown who walks straight, Falconi said. The people who are on the street are really the failures of capitalist society. During Falconi's radio time, people gather in a circle to watch and sing along. Falconi's work has made him famous in the neighborhood. Falconi and Massira found housing for about 20 newly homeless people and gave out 200 tents provided by a Brazilian non-governmental organization. Jailson Antonio G. Oliveira says that the clown is his main support. Falconi's aid group pays for the 51-year-old's shelter. Today, I have a better life because of Flavio Falconi, the clown, said Oliveira. He's my right arm. He helps with everything he can. Government support is extremely limited in places like Crackland. 1 month after the coronavirus arrived in Brazil in April 2020, the government closed down a neighborhood homeless shelter. So now the closest shelter is 3 kilometers away. The Brazilian homeless population increased after government aid went away at the end of 2020. Payments are finally starting up again this month at lower rates. For many, the money is too late. Millions of people have fallen into poverty since the start of 2021. When the money ran out, Jonathan G. David G. Souza Hayes and Bruna Kelly Simões lost their home. This year, the couple moved into a tent they set up between two trees in Cracolandia. As long as there are no jobs, the emergency payment should have been maintained as it was, Hayes said. It's been difficult, very difficult. The two are on the street just as COVID-19 is at its worst point in Brazil. The country recorded 4,000 daily deaths for the first time last week. Brazil is second to only the United States in deaths and cases. I'm Alice Bryant.
Bitcoin rose to record highs on Wednesday as a major digital currency company went public on America's NASDAQ stock exchange. Going public means a company sells shares of stock to raise money. It also means that the owner of the company must now answer to those who bought the stock. At one point before the listing of the company, Coinbase, the value of Bitcoin rose above $64,000. Coinbase is the largest U.S. exchange for digital currency, also known as cryptocurrency. Bitcoin is the world's biggest form of cryptocurrency. The value of Bitcoin has gone up and down wildly since it was created in 2009 by a mysterious developer or group that went by the name Satoshi Nakamoto. This year, the digital currency reached another major record in early January when it hit $40,000. Experts say the continued climb of Bitcoin in recent months was partly fueled by decisions by some major U.S. companies to invest in Bitcoin. Those moves, along with the listing of Coinbase on the NASDAQ, have helped bring cryptocurrencies more into the U.S. financial mainstream, the experts say. One company supporting Bitcoin is American electric car maker Tesla. The company announced in February it had invested about $1.5 billion in the digital currency. Tesla said it planned to accept Bitcoin as payment for its cars and other products. Another major buyer was financial services company Square, which said in February it had invested $170 million in Bitcoin. Square operates the Cash App payment service. PayPal and Visa also recently said they would permit users to make payments with cryptocurrencies. Even major American investment banks like Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley have signaled interest in getting involved in digital currencies in the future. Financial companies had long warned against such investments because of the high risks and unpredictability linked to them. But the listing of Coinbase on the NASDAQ is seen by some financial experts as the biggest milestone yet for cryptocurrencies. William Kong is an associate professor of finance at Cornell University's S.C. Johnson College of Business. He told Reuters that the Coinbase listing is significant in that it marks the growth of the industry and its acceptance into mainstream business. Michael Hewson, an analyst at CMC Markets in Britain, told the French press agency AFP he thinks digital currencies have had a good year. With Bitcoin already having more than doubled in the last 6 months, and cryptocurrencies becoming more popular with more mainstream investors, it can certainly be argued that crypto has become more mainstream in the past 12 months, he said. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember.
America at its best matches a commitment to principle with a concern for civility.
Bush, the Republican nominee, defeated Vice President Al Gore, the Democratic candidate, in the presidential election of 2000. A dispute over the ballot count in Florida delayed the declaration of a winner and only added to political divisions in the country. The results in Florida were extremely close. 5 weeks passed as courts considered the issues. Finally, a conservative majority on the United States Supreme Court settled the matter. George Bush was to be president. Bush gave his inaugural speech on January 20th, 2001.
With a simple oath, we affirm old traditions and make new beginnings. As I begin, I thank President Clinton for his service to our nation. And I thank Vice President Gore for a contest conducted with spirit and ended with grace.
The new president spoke of American ideals.
The grandest of these ideals is an unfolding American promise that everyone belongs, that everyone deserves a chance, that no insignificant person was ever born.
And he called on Americans to care for and respect each other.
Today we affirm a new commitment to live out our nation's promise through civility, courage, compassion, and character. America at its best matches a commitment to principle with a concern for civility. A civil society demands from each of us goodwill and respect, fair dealing, and forgiveness.
Soon after his inauguration, President Bush established the White House Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives. The goal was to fight problems like homelessness and drug abuse with the help of social agencies connected to religious groups. Critics argued that this could violate the separation of religion and government under the United States Constitution. But the president said the agencies would provide shelter and food, not Bibles. President Bush took several actions on the environment during his first term, two of which brought strong protests from environmentalists. In March 2001, he made the decision to reject the Kyoto Protocol. That international treaty sought reductions in the release of carbon dioxide and other industrial gases blamed for trapping heat in the atmosphere. Negotiators approved the treaty in Kyoto, Japan, at the end of 1997, to show their concern about climate change. Vice President Gore later signed the Kyoto Protocol for the United States. But President Bill Clinton never sent it to the Senate for its required approval. The treaty faced enough opposition in the Senate that it might have been defeated. President Bush decided to unsign the treaty. He said he did not want to put the United States at a competitive disadvantage with big developing countries like China and India. Those countries would not have been required to cut the large amounts of greenhouse gases they were producing. Bush said the agreement was unfair and would harm American industry at a time when the economy was weakening. Critics said the president's decision would harm the environment and set a bad example for the world. Another environmental issue concerned exploring for oil and natural gas. The president supported a measure to allow drilling in a wildlife refuge in the state of Alaska. He said doing so would reduce American dependence on foreign oil. Opponents argued that it would destroy wildlife in some of America's most beautiful natural surroundings. In the end, the environmentalists won. Congress did not approve the drilling.
Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule.
One of President Bush's major domestic goals was improving America's public education system.
Working your fingers right down to the bone. The guy behind you won't leave you alone. Ring, ring, goes the bell.
In January 2002, he signed legislation passed by Congress called the No Child Left Behind Act.
We owe the children of America a good education, and today begins a new era. A new time in public education in our country. As of this hour, America's schools will be on a new path of reform and a new path of results.
The law increased the role of the federal government in an area where Americans have traditionally defended local control, public education. No Child Left Behind had several goals. To help poor and minority students improve their performance. To provide choices for parents with students in low-performing schools. And to increase money for schools in low-income areas. The law required all students in grades 3 through 8 to be tested every year in reading and math. It held schools responsible for showing that all students were making progress based on standards chosen by the states themselves. No Child Left Behind had many supporters, but critics said the expectations were unreasonable and that teachers might just teach to the test. Another major piece of legislation dealt with health care for older Americans. President Bush wanted to extend Medicare, the nation's health insurance program, for people 65 and older.
For nearly four decades, Medicare has been the binding commitment of a caring society. We must renew that commitment by providing our seniors with the preventative care and new medicines that are transforming health care in our country. We must protect seniors from high medical costs that can rob them of their savings. And we must place patients and their doctors at the center of every health care decision. My goal is to give seniors more choices and better benefits under Medicare, including a long-awaited prescription drug benefit.
In 2003, he signed a law to help 40 million older Americans pay for their medicine. On another issue, he banned federal funding for research on any new stem cells taken from human embryos. but he agreed to allow the first federal spending on research on existing lines of embryonic stem cells. Such cells interest some medical researchers because they can grow into different kinds of cells. But opponents object, for moral and religious reasons, to destroying embryos for the purpose of harvesting stem cells. George Bush promised to cut taxes for Americans. In 2001, he signed a bill passed by Congress calling for more than $1 trillion in tax reductions over time. The president said the economy would improve if people had more money to spend. In 2003, Congress passed $350 billion in additional tax reductions. That was less than half of what the president had proposed. In 2002, President Bush signed a law that increased punishments for financial dishonesty by companies. The new law also established an independent group to oversee the accounting industry. The action came after several major companies failed, including, in 2001, Enron.
I got money wherever I go. I see money beginning to grow.
Enron had grown into America's leading energy company.
In the canyons of downtown Houston, home to the country's energy giants, a sense of gloom surrounds this one. Only months ago, it was the mightiest of them all. Now Enron answers the phone with this recorded message.
On December 2nd, Enron filed under Chapter 11 of the Bankruptcy Code, thus commencing proceedings to stabilize our financial situation.
It was at that time the largest bankruptcy in American history. 10,000 people lost their jobs. Some Enron investors lost all their money in the failure. Former employees lost the retirement benefits they needed to live on. Some top Enron officials were found to have used dishonest accounting methods to hide financial problems from investors. Enron's troubles also involved two large banks, Chase and Citigroup, and a big financial company, Merrill Lynch.
Enron couldn't have engaged in the deceptions it did without the help from a major financial institution. Merrill Lynch assisted Enron in cooking its books by pretending to purchase an existing Enron asset when it was really engaged in a loan.
Senator Carl Levin led a hearing into accounting and consulting practices and how they benefited Enron. Those actions included inflating the value of the company's stock. The collapse of Enron was followed by a series of other corporate failures linked to dishonest accounting methods. November 2nd, 2004 was Election Day. 4 years earlier, George W. Bush had been elected in one of the closest races in American history. Now he would have another chance to test his popularity with the American people.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.